Numbers 12. We're still studying leprosy, and we probably will be for a long time, but leprosy is, there's more space, more scripture devoted to what leprosy is than any other thing that we would think of in terms of, that is an unhealthy condition. It's not a disease, it's a spiritual condition, and it's not pronounced clean by medical evidence, it's pronounced clean by spiritual evidence, by the priest. Leprosy is a spiritual condition which reflects rebellion. The leprosy of the forehead is your rebellion against God. The leprosy in the rest of the body is your rebellion against the brethren. And we've seen and began looking into all of the manifestations of the typical forms of leprosy in the scriptures. Now, Jesus never healed a leper. He cleansed them. And they were only cleansed, they were only eligible for being cleansed when they were not, the little spots disappeared, but when they became totally leprous from the bottom of their foot to the top of their head. So it's the idea that you see, along with Paul, that you are the chief of sinners. There's no good thing in you. There's no except that which is contained as a vessel. But there's no will worship. There's no act of your will that can satisfy God or man. You got that? And all of the efforts of modern religion and the things that we've been taught from childhood are in effect will worship, trying to make ourselves better. Now, that's a horrendous thing to find out. That you have no righteousness in yourself. You have no right to compare yourself with anyone. That all are guilty. And so you start, then once you're declared leprous from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet, then the priest declares you clean. But anytime raw flesh appears, i.e. in the spirit, I'm going to take care of this myself, I'm going to do this, then leprosy appears again. You're unclean again. So what happens now? Here the camp is moving and you're unclean. What happens to you? Well, that's what we're going to find out. Chapter 12, Numbers. And Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman.
Is that because they weren't supposed to marry outside of Israel or something?
Well, it's probably because they didn't like blacks and Jews. No, I'm sorry.
So was it racial or religious?
No, it was both. Israel was forbidden to marry outside, except that Moses married her before he, you know, when he was in an apostate condition. Okay? So anyway, they're complaining. And they said, "Hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us?" And the Lord heard it. In other words, what they're saying is, what right does Moses have? He screws up all the time. Look at here. He married an illegal woman. And the Lord heard it. And then, parenthetical expression, the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. Now we know that he wasn't meek by our definition of meek. He killed an Egyptian. He raised hell with everybody all the time. Screamed and yelled at him. But the word meek here is better translated abandoned. And in the spirit, it's this humongous. In the Greek, what use of meek? It's one of these chariot horses that's incredibly strong and powerful, yet in perfect harness and trained. Not by any man, but by God. He's in yielding only to God. And the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses and unto Aaron and unto Miriam, "Come ye three unto the tabernacle of the congregation." And the three came out. And the Lord came down in a pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam, and both came forth. And he said, Hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision, and will speak unto him in a dream. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him I will speak mouth to mouth, even apparently or clearly, and not in dark speeches. In the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Wherefore then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. That's a pretty wild deal. What?
That puts you on the edge.
Kind of makes you nervous. Sort of like reading about Ananias and Sapphira. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle, and behold, Miriam became a leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. She was leprous because of rebellion. Understand that? And Aaron said unto Moses, Alas, my Lord, I beseech thee, lay not the sin upon us, wherein we have done foolishly, and wherein we have sinned. Let her not be as one dead, of whom the flesh is half consumed when he cometh out of his mother's womb. I've told you that from the spiritual standpoint, when you're in a state of rebellion, from God's standpoint, you're dead. Leprosy is walking death. The only bad part of the walking death is when you try to be alive, raw flesh is seen. All right. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, Heal her now, O God, I beseech thee. And the Lord said unto Moses, If her father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out from the camp 7 days, and after that, let her be received in again. And Miriam was shut out from the camp 7 days, and the people journeyed not till Miriam was brought in again. Now, what I want you to see here, we've been studying all the evil and bad stuff about spiritual leprosy. God gave her leprosy, but you remember when Israel was in the wilderness, if the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire was down over the tabernacle, which was signified the presence of God, they didn't move. They stayed there. And the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire was raised, then they moved. That was the only way that they knew. They didn't have any maps. When the pillar was down, they stayed. When the pillar was raised, they moved, and they followed the pillar. God gave Miriam leprosy, but God, by the cloud, would not allow the people to move until she was cleansed. You understand the mercy of God? There are some of you that are in a leprous condition in the spirit, and God will not allow us to move on until you are in a state where you are cleansed. You understand me? It's both God's awe and fear with regard to the idea that you would be in a leprous condition, and it's God's grace and mercy that says we won't move until you're cleansed of the leprous condition. Now, we don't have any visible clouds of fire and pillars of clouds any longer. But we do have something else.
Let me ask a couple of things. She was leprous, white as snow. Does that mean totally leprous? Or
it doesn't say.
And then it doesn't say that she got rid of it, she just got to come back in the camp.
Well, she had to go, again.
She became clean, but...
She became clean by the process described in the law.
priest pronounced it clean after
after the time, and they had to go through. They don't like people. But this is written to people that know the law. And so when you know the law, you know that she can't be cleansed under the law without going through the separation, being seen that she's totally leprous, then going through the rites of purification of the sparrows and the blood. So, I mean, not all of that had to happen before she could be before they could be cleansed, before she could be
blooded. But she still might have been white as snow.
Oh, yeah.
She'd be back in.
Yeah.
I was wondering why Aaron wasn't also...
Because Aaron was the type of... In this case, the type of Christ. He couldn't. And Miriam was the type of the bride.
In the cleansing process, would Aaron have had to minister then?
Yeah. Now...
It's possible that she appeared normal because there's a precedent for that. When Moses was in Moses' hand.
Right. Remember, you can appear... Well, that's another story. I've got to find out the.
Because all God did there was show her.
Show
what
her.
She really looked like.
Right. I've got to find that thing about the cloud and the pillar because it's we've studied it 100 times. I'm going to go through it again. Is it Numbers? I thought it was Numbers 15, but it's not.
Exodus 40.
No, it's Numbers 9. I think. Yeah, Numbers 9:15. I knew there was a 15. Everybody got it? Numbers 9? Numbers chapter 9, verse 15. And on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, namely the tent of the testimony. And that was the separate little deal in the middle that held the Holy of Holies, right? And at even there was upon the tabernacle, as it were, the appearance of fire until morning. So in the daytime, when the sun was up, it looked like a cloud. At night, it looked like a fire. It wasn't either one. You understand? It just looked like. So it was always. The cloud covered it by day, and the appearance of fire by night. And when the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then after that the children of Israel journeyed. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel pitched their tents. At the commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed. And at the commandment of the Lord, they pitched. As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they rested in their tents. And when the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle many days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. And so it was, when the cloud was a few days upon the tabernacle, according to the commandment of the Lord, they abode in their tents. And according to the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. And so it was, when the cloud abode from even until unto the morning, and the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they journeyed. Whether it was by day or by night that the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. Or whether it were 2 days or a month or a year that the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, remaining thereon, the children of Israel abode in their tents and journeyed not. But when it was taken up, they journeyed. At the commandment of the Lord, they rested in their tents, and at the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Lord at the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. Now you got to visualize this. There's 600,000 men, plus their wives and children, plus the mixed multitude. And they all had opinions. You got it? Every one of them, just like every one of you, has an opinion. When that cloud was down over the tent, they stayed still. When the cloud was raised, they moved. And sometimes, you know, they may have spent 3 or 4 months here, a year here, but they spent almost 39 years in Kadesh Barnea. Now, I want you to visualize something. Visualize your response to spending a year in a place. And number one was distasteful to you. And number two, didn't meet any of your preconceived notions of what God's stuff was about. Was uncomfortable. Was terribly hot in the daytime, terribly cold at night. No opportunity for careers. No opportunity to fulfill your little plans. They just stayed. Now, the scriptures don't talk about it too much, but we know that a lot of them didn't stay. A lot of them complained or were in a state of rebellion. The act of murmuring or the act of complaining is the evidence of rebellion, therefore the evidence of leprosy. You understand? And God will cause, God doesn't know, we don't have these little clouds and fires and stuff running around leading us. Now, that cloud being down can only be known internally. And that cloud being down is whenever there's doubt, you do nothing. When the doubt is gone, you move. Any time you push against your doubt, it's the evidence of your leprosy. Now this is something, again, that no one else can know. This is between you and God. We haven't talked about this before, about the doubt. Pushing against the doubt is the evidence of leprosy. A believer never, ever once has to make a decision. A believer never, ever once is busy. A believer never, ever once hurries. Because your internal guidance system is something totally different than what your senses and what those around you can perceive. Now, for most of you, for many of you, you've spent a lifetime operating only in doubt. You have never once in your life waited. You've always been in a position where you are judging between two or more alternatives. And because of that, you live in a state of anxiety.
Well, we talked about pushing against the doubt. It may just be semantical, but is it the same as pushing through the doubt?
Same thing. Rather than resting, you obstinately and determinedly forge on ahead. Push through the doubt. Now, it sounds, and see, God doesn't care about big things versus little things. If there's the slightest doubt about the slightest, smallest thing in your life, then you're to do nothing. Now this is big time. Because for most of your lives, all you've ever done is to push against that doubt. The divine impulse, its only manifestation in this, your temple, is doubt or no doubt. In other words, think of the times in your life. I was reviewing this in my own mind last night about how many times I've made decisions. And they're all wrong. Time proved that they were wrong. But everybody around you, your family, your friends, your acquaintances, are trying to push you to a point where you will make a decision. And the reason they're doing it is they are leprous, therefore they must needs make you leprous in the spirit. Can you believe what life would be like in terms of being totally and completely free from anxiety if you never again from this moment forward had to make a decision? Well, you can't make decisions anymore, because now you know that the act of making a decision is that which is will worship, which causes a spiritual leprosy to be manifested in your temple, in your vessel.
rebellion and will worship are
exactly
really
the same thing. Exactly the same. Now, some of you have no idea what I'm talking about.
Well, I've got a question about the doubt thing. I mean, that part's clear, but I think, at least in my case, I frequently... Well, is there a relationship between fear and doubt? I feel like I frequently, I'll be afraid to do something, or I'll just be plain old sloth.
That's God's business. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the source of the doubt is by your understanding.
In other words, fear can be a cause of doubt.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter what it looks
it
like.
Doesn't matter what it looks like. That's why we've got to get beyond this. And it doesn't matter if it's caused by, you know, high place identities or groves or, you know, all these other weird shit. It matters only that doubt exists. If there is doubt for any reason, you wait.
Everybody that ever lived and ever will live is already totally leprous.
But they don't know it.
The fact of the rebellion is not seeing it, or it's the actual disease, or...
Stop a minute and think about it. Think about what decision-making is. Decision-making in the spirit is simply rising above the cloud. Remember, that's what Christ saw Satan thrown down from heaven because he tried to rise above the cloud. Now, the reason that kind of a scripture and all these others never make any sense except in some mystical kind of way is because everybody, always, their entire life has risen above the cloud. You rise above the cloud by the act of will worship or by the act of making a decision. Even by the act of giving your decision over to someone else. That's what creates cults.
And even though you have a doubt...
You have a doubt, but you have...
Blame it on somebody.
Right. You have an opportunity to blame it on somebody.
It's trusting oppression.
So people rise above the doubt to hide their leprosy?
No.
It's an expression of their leprosy.
It's an expression of their... Yeah. Okay. Am I reaching? Do you understand? Do you understand how many times today you've risen above the cloud? If you don't rise above the cloud, if you live life without making a decision, I guarantee you that you will be separate from the world. They'll call you crazy. They'll call you every name in the book, just as they did Jesus.
When you doubt, is that kind of like leaving the tribe?
When you doubt... It's not anything. It's just the cloud is down. But doubt is good.
But the people who murmured and complained and stuff,
they rise above the doubt. That's what they're doing. Rather than just staying and waiting until you are freed and you experience and taste that which liberty truly is, you rise above it through the act of rebellion. Life is so simple. I know you all well enough to know how many thousand times you rise above the doubt. But you can't do that anymore. Because now, to rise above the doubt makes you the unclean thing. Spiritually unclean, because it's will worship. You, by an act of your will, you have placed yourself as God. Because you judge for yourself good and evil. You judge for yourself timing. Mm-hmm. Let's get down to the short hairs. You remember, all that life is a series of competing stimuli. Okay, let's assume you're going to work, right? You get up in the morning and you don't feel like going to work. You have doubt about going to work. Live in that doubt. Say, okay, I'm not going to go to work. I'm not going to do anything. I guarantee you that what will happen is that that will be the act of saying no, or the act of being will cause a stimulus to arise in you that will override any doubt.
Yeah.
You understand me?
Yeah.
Instead of going to work.
Instead of going to work in that condition of, oh my God, I hate this, this life is terrible, and a mystery will take place in you. The mystery will be that now when you are outside of the leprosy, whatsoever you do in thought, in word, in deed, you will do joyously as unto God. Because your mind is no longer captured in the Gentile system. Because you've risked all to say, okay, I'm not going to work.
Yeah, that this is hitting me in the area of that actual doubts, real doubts
real
in
doubts.
Your mind, where you say, you know, it's something that you try, you know, well, me, I try to, you know, I have a doubt and I'll try to rise above it, get out of it, do anything but wait in it because of the risk.
That's right.
Now, the risk is,
let's get even more serious. A lot of you are married. You come to a position, whatever the stimulus caused, and you have a doubt, you have a fear that you're married, or that you want to be married. At that point, you're not. Now risk everything. I'm not married, I'm going to get a divorce. You see, otherwise you live in this false identity, I should, therefore I will act like I am married. By risking everything, then it's God in His resurrection that's the only thing that can be your meat. I don't feel like I have a doubt about anything, whatever it is. Stop! Don't do anything! Don't play in that vineyard of doubt. Wait. Because to rise above it from now on for you is leprosy. And you are unclean. Now, I'm talking, some of you have never known anything else other than your attempts to rise above the cloud. So a lot of this isn't computing. All you've never once waited. You've always, He put 1,000 obstacles in your path, hoping you would stop and inquire and seek after Him. But you always and forever determinedly forged on ahead by your own will, by the strength of your own personality. We can't do that anymore. Now you've got to risk all every time there's doubt. Do you have a doubt about whether you believe in God? Fine. You're not your business. Wait, say, admit it. Do you have a doubt whether you should come here? Don't come here. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And if you're not living in that liberty, you're rising above it by your own will worship, and you'll bring leprosy into this house.
Whatever is not of faith is sin. So that's the other half of that.
Right. Romans 14:23. He that doubteth is damned. For whatsoever does not proceed from faith is sin. And that's whatsoever. It's whether or not you should take a bite of food if you have a doubt. Don't. Then you can begin to be guided by the true Spirit of God. And you will short-circuit this stupid thing you call your brain. The Antichrist. Do you remember in Isaiah? The reason that Satan was cast down from the heavens was because he rose above the cloud. do that anymore. It doesn't matter if it makes no sense to anyone in your entire world. Please understand. I'm not saying this for your sake. I'm saying this for this house's sake. If an unclean garment, even the size of an olive, is put inside a clean house, the house becomes unclean. A house that is shut up. I mean, remember we went through the leprosy of the house, right? Okay, now a house that is shut up for the inspection period can't convey uncleanliness from the outside. In other words, it's only that which is in the house itself it can't convey it outside. But if a house that has been certified as unclean conveys uncleanness, it conveys it uncleanness both inside and out. So even if you passed under its shadow, you become unclean. You understand?
Talking about the difference between something inside the house having leprosy or the whole house being ruled, judged leprous.
Yeah, it's remember the process when the priest, if they see this the fretting spread of the color, and then the priest looks at it and he says it's leprous, and he shuts it up.
Oh, okay.
For an inspection period. Right.
Process. One of them, it doesn't do anything on the outside. When it's finally judged that it is leprous, then even its shadow.
Right. Even if unless it had to be destroyed instantly. If it isn't destroyed instantly, it will convey leprosy to anything that comes into its shadow. That's big.
What's the inspection time out? You know, the time, the difference between, you know, you see that there's leprosy.
If it spreads, then it's declared leprous. If it doesn't spread, then it's declared clean. It wasn't leprous in the first place.
Oh.
It's 2 days, two different periods, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's 7 days.
And once they see that it is spreading,
then it's declared unclean. And if it isn't destroyed immediately, it will convey leprosy to anything that even falls in its shadow.
So this could be in a 2 day period, they see it spread?
No, it has to be 7 days.
7 days. If it spread, then they blow the house up.
They have to take it apart stone by stone, and they have to cast it into an unclean place outside the wall. Namely, Gehenna. Now, when a house is made unclean, or declared unclean, any possession which may be made clean by immersion are taken out of the house before it's destroyed. Remember when Christ said, "In my Father's house are many mansions." We've determined that it meant in my Father's house there are many synagogues. The idea of touching not the unclean thing is something totally different than what we've thought it meant. It's what, you know, what Gary was talking about. The unclean thing isn't the rat that causes you repulsion. The unclean thing is you in a state that is anything less than the abandonment of yourself to His perfect grace. Now, that's why there's such a process that goes on in a body of believers. That's why it's so absolutely wild to an outside observer. You understand? Because the idea, and again, leprosy can't be seen in the world. It can't be seen in the wilderness. It can only be, and it can't be in Jerusalem. It can only be in this little period, in the promise. And that trip, that trek from the world to the New Jerusalem is the only trek that we're on. And the only thing that keeps us from being totally and completely in the promise is this thing here. Now the thing that we're reviewing about this thing here is the spiritual condition called leprosy. All right. If an unclean man puts his head and part of his body, and the larger part of his body, into a clean house, the house becomes unclean, or vice versa. If a clean man puts his head and part of his body into an unclean house, the man becomes unclean. You got it?
No. What was the first part?
If an unclean man puts his head into a clean house, the house becomes unclean.
Huh.
And vice versa. If an unclean man enters a house, all the vessels in it become unclean, except those that are tightly sealed, tightly covered with the one true covering.
Is the immersion, you mentioned that, is that like baptism? The idea of Satan's house or something is totally unclean, but immersion somehow is the...
Yeah.
Baptism.
Well, there's all kinds of stuff in the Midrash. It's kind of interesting. Man in the Midrash interpretations, a man is considered evenly balanced. He's one half water and one half blood. When he is in a state of acceptance, these are balanced. If he's in a state of sin, the water exceeds, and he has what's called dropsy, or, you know. If he's in a state of slander or rebellion, the blood exceeds, and he's leprous. Now, don't worry about it. I'm just reading you some stuff for your information. The test of leprosy may be compared to a vegetable garden, in which a spring flows into the garden. If the spring flows openly, without obstruction, the vegetables are dark, i.e. they're ripe. If the spring ceases or is dammed, the vegetables fade, i.e. they turn white, as the sign of leprosy. So in us, we are fed by a spring of living water. Out of our bellies flow rivers of living water. If they are dammed by a state of fear or rebellion or anything else where we cannot give freely whatever is there without judging it for ourselves, then in the spirit we become as that dying vegetable that's turning white and withering away.
When Ollie was talking about the cloud being up or down and if it's out there then just don't do it, I was sitting here saying, right, sure. I'm going to go to Ollie and I'm going to say, I have doubt about this, I'm not going to do it. At which point he's going to kick me in.
Have I ever kicked you?
Yeah.
When?
You hit me. Yeah,
I've never hit you.
Usually when there are no witnesses.
Huh?
Usually when there are no witnesses. We're not sure.
These marks are going to show.
That's right. Oh, it's Levi.
Levi abuse.
So anyway.
Levi won't kick your favorite Levi.
I'm sitting here saying that, and you went on talking, and I'm going, yeah, right. And I was sitting here arguing with you. And I went, okay, what I'm going to do at the break is I'm going to tell Ollie that I have not wanted to go see our agent. I don't want to go see our agent. I feel weird about it. I don't know why, so I'm not going to do it. And I figured, well, he'd have a shit fit and we'd get in a big argument, but I said, so what? I'm going to do it anyway. And the reason I was doing that was because for 3 weeks now, every time I thought about going to see her, I've had this strange, unpleasant feeling in my chest. And about 30 seconds after I went through this internally, the feeling went away, and I went, oh, okay, now I'll go see her. And now I go.
So what'd you say?
Well, I'm just here.
We haven't gone to see her yet.
But for some reason or other, I just didn't want to go. And I wasn't saying that.
Was she back in town? She has a...
No, she's not back yet, but the agent he's talking about is seeing Sandra.
Oh.
She's still out of town. Go to Colossians 2. Colossians 2, verse... 16. the first few verses talk about that now you are complete in him. Beware let any man spoil you through the principles of the world and vain deceits and all that crap. Now in 16 he says, let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink or in respect of a holy day or of the new moon or of the Sabbath days, which are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Christ. And the shadow means pattern or metaphor or that kind of a word. Let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility. And you understand what voluntary humility is?
Will worship.
It's the act of your will to be in a certain position.
Choosing position.
Okay. And worshiping of angels, intruding into those things which he hath not seen, vainly puffed up by his fleshy mind. Every time you see the word flesh in the New Testament, it's an indicator that God is talking about, or the scriptures are talking about, this will worship where you have transferred, you have taken something on yourself and turned it by your own strength to do something. You got it? And not holding the head, from which all the body by joints and bands having nourishment ministered and knit together increaseth with the increase of God. Wherefore, if you be dead with Christ from the rudiments or principles of the world, why, as though living in the world, are you subject to ordinances? Touch not, taste not, handle not, which all are to perish with the using after the commandments and doctrines of men, which things have indeed a show of wisdom. And the word show there is the word that's used for makeup. It's like you put makeup on. It's the Greek word, the same word, for show. Which have indeed a show of wisdom in will worship and humility and neglecting of the body, not in any honor to the satisfying of the flesh, but are of no value in curbing the flesh. The idea of will worship has to become so odious that it becomes vomit to you. The idea of liturgy or worship by liturgy or running around, okay, now it's time we raise it, now it's time you do this, now it's time you sit down, now you stand up, now you sit down. If you don't want to do something, don't do it. If there's doubt, don't do it. You're not going to satisfy God, you're just going to make a show of will worship. And you're going to bring leprosy into the camp. Oh, I'm supposed to be this way. I'm so tired of people. The only common denominator we have outwardly is that we're tired of acting. Don't fall into it. You know, you're living in fear again. You think, oh my God, if something happens, then I'll never have a wife or I'll never have a girlfriend. That's ridiculous. There are more foxes in this body in the last few months since you started going together with somebody. I mean, you must have pause to wonder.
U.S.
Yeah.
Well, I know you have. Well, then admit it. You know, you don't have to act anymore. You don't have to play those silly games. The thing that Paul said in Timothy to be aware of, is those that have a form of godliness but deny his ability. And they deny his ability because they force you into acting in a certain way. Okay, let's put on our Sunday best. Let's put our little strings around our neck. Let's go sit in little pews. Let's go. Or here you've got the same damn thing. We've developed a liturgy here, so I got to act this way here. Well, you don't have to act. If you act, it's leprosy. I hate it. You know, and if you disagree with me, scream and yell at me, throw something at me, but don't sit there in silent acquiescence.
Holy, what's the difference between rebellion and saying no?
Rebellion is only an inward process. It's not letting out what's there.
Yeah, it's within.
There's nothing.
And if the rebellion is projected,
then it's the best. No.
But it's not still rebellion?
No. It's life. Let me show you something. Go to Matthew 26, 22.
There was something about this having doubt. It's like
Having doubt can...
Well, there's something else. If you don't have doubt, but you don't do it anyway.
22. Oh, sorry.
It's like you're stifling the spirit to want to do something. You don't have doubt, but you don't do it anyway.
Yeah. You gotta hear this. Somebody said this outside. You can be in grace, in mercy, in obedience. If you are depressed, if you have doubt, if you feel shitty, if you want to kill me or kill anybody else, it doesn't matter. That's not rebellion. Nobody's forcing you to believe anything. God only wants one thing from you, that you let out what's in there.
Judy just let out her lunch.
What was happening in the case of Miriam and Aaron? They were letting a little out, but they weren't letting the whole thing
That's
out.
Right. They had ulterior motives.
They were asking a certain question, and in the back in their minds, they were maneuvering.
And what? Again,
they murdered.
Read any place in the New Testament, and you find out that Jesus does this thing. When people come to him and ask a question or say something, he hardly ever once talks to what they said. He talks to the root, and it just destroys them. Man, you're created for freedom. I mean, I've tried to tell, some of you, I don't care. I mean, I love it if you disagree with me. God loves it if you disagree. There has to be, and I'm not saying whether I'm right or wrong, there has to be heresy, so because that's the testing. Heresy just means a disagreement.
That's not true.
What?
It's not true. That's a contraction
of the word heresy. That's pretty good. Matthew 21, I got it close. Matthew 21, verse 28. But what think ye?
Matthew 21,
verse 28. We just studied this the other night. But what think ye? A certain man had two sons. And he came to the first and said, Son, go work today in my vineyard. And he answered and said, I will not. But afterward he repented and went. And he came to the second and said, Likewise. And he answered and said, I go, sir. Sweet little pussy. And he went not. What?
It's not in here. It's in the best text.
Well, I was targeting me.
Her name was
Targum.
Yeah, revised Ole Edition.
What?
His name was Jim.
New American Ole Digest.
Jim.
Jim Pussy.
Where did you get Jim? Why are you picking on Jim?
I think it was Harry.
You
can't do that.
No, the first guy was here. No,
it wasn't.
Yes, it was. I disagreed with
you. And he came to the second and said, Likewise. And he answered and said, I go, sir, and went not. Whether of them twain did the will of his father? They said unto him, The first. Jesus said, Verily I say unto you, that the publicans and the harlots go into the kingdom of God before you. Again, it's the idea of God. I mean, say no. Don't play in the vineyard if you don't want to be there. Turn your back on it. Then God, by his Spirit, has an opportunity for repentance. But the idea of what the first son did, he said, oh yeah, I'm going. And he walks away, and he backs up, smiling. And that's what you do half the time in these situations. Have the courage to say no. I don't care if it's to me or to God or to anybody else.
No.
What?
I'm not going to the New Year's party.
I don't care.
Well, I said yes earlier. I didn't want to say yes.
Okay. You understand? Just have the courage to say no. Then it's God's business. But if you are in this mode of, oh yes, I'm going to do it, you make a promise. You know what? A believer can never make a promise. If a believer makes a promise, he lies twice.
How so?
Because first of all, he extends himself in time, which is against everything there is. And second of all,
He's promising, he's committing spiritual usury because he's promising something that isn't his. A believer never wastes time with promises.
Are we backing into our New Year's resolution sermon?
Probably. I mean, spiritual usury is evil above all things, and it's you spiritual usury. It's not just the money usury stuff. It's when you promise something that's not yours to promise, and you project it into the future. What you're doing is the same as the first son did. You're saying, "Yes, I will," but you don't. God doesn't want your stupid promises. You have been bought with a price. Now have the guts to let out what's in there. It's up to him what happens. It's not your business.
I've got this backwards.
What?
Second. Yeah, the first one says, "I will not," but then he went.
Oh, yeah, he's a good one.
He's the good one.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I said the first.
Okay, but Jesus says the same thing. They say,
The
first he says, "Verily I say unto you that the publicans and harlots go to the kingdom of God before you." Like they gave him the wrong answer.
No, they gave him the right answer, but he finessed him. But they're the second sons.
They're the ones that say they're not going to go.
They're the ones that say they care about the things of God.
They gave the right answer, but they were the wrong guys.
Okay. It's easier if you find the names here.
You understand, and this applies, as we said, to everything in your life. Have the courage to respond to the divine impulse within you without worrying about its consequences. Stop the promising bullshit. I mean, you don't need to do that anymore. Okay, I'm going to shut up. Anybody have anything else? Take it, big guy.